tuned in to the Community Cats podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Nadia Asiguera and Chris Ramone, who joined animal welfare as volunteers in 2014 after stumbling upon a group of community cats. They began dedicating their time and effort to helping kittens and cats in their community through TNR and fostering. Chris is currently the Chief Program Officer for Pasadena Humane. During his time working in animal welfare, he has managed and developed various programs and is most proud of creating community cat programs and helping develop foster programs. Nadia is currently the program manager for the UC Davis Port Shelter Medicine Program. During her time in animal welfare, she has managed a high-volume barrier-free kitten foster program and is most passionate about making animal welfare a welcoming and inclusive space for all. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So, Chris, first and foremost, how'd you become passionate about cats?
Well, I don't know that my story is that uncommon. I had a cat when I was little. She was great. And, you know, after nature sadly ran its course, we had animals as I was growing up. I'm just as much of a dog person as I am a cat person. But how I really got into the weeds of it is when Nadia and I, you know, as you mentioned, stumbled across a group of outdoor cats. I had heard of TNR. I knew that it was a practice. I didn't really know any details about it, though. But as I'm sure we'll kind of get into the crux of that later on in the conversation, I realized that, you know, opening our home to a litter of kittens, that the impact was, you know, so great. And when I look at the volume of numbers in which cats enter shelters compared to dogs, I knew that this is where I had to put a lot of my focus and efforts.
Nadia, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, unlike Chris, I didn't grow up with cats in my life or as pets. We did have a community cat who lived outside our home, and she was always giving birth, and we just let nature take its course. We knew inherently that mom knows best, so we never pulled the kittens. And it wasn't until well into my adulthood, being with Chris on that day, we had gone to pick up pizza and we actually ended up with joining the cat business.
So forget the pizza. It was all about the cats.
Yes.
Yeah. I saw my first community kitten in my life walking home from getting ice cream. So maybe there is a theme there. Food brings cats. That's for sure.
It's really special. I think that when I've talked to so many people in this community, there's a lot of moments in life that are really difficult to pinpoint, but this was one of it for both of us. And I just remember, like, we went into that liquor store, we bought a couple of cans of wet food. And as soon as I opened up, they just all came out and it was like something out of a movie. So I will always remember that moment.
Chris, expanding on that though, how did you take it from that moment to moving into Trap, Neuter, Return? Did you know about Trap, Neuter, Return before that moment, or did you have to do some research?
I had heard about it, but I wasn't very familiar with it. This was back when there was still an injunction happening in Los Angeles that I was unaware of. But I assumed at the time that it was as easy as calling animal control and saying, hey, there's some cats out in this location, which is exactly what I did. So I called our local shelter and learned that, you know, their position was to do nothing and treat them as wildlife. So I was really surprised to hear that. But I also knew enough to know that these cats don't get altered, that this group of cats that, you know, accosted me from out of the bushes for wet food, which was probably about 10 or 12 cats, that if there wasn't any intervention that happened, that 10 or 12 was going to turn into 20 or 30. So not being immersed in cats at that time, I at least knew that that was going to happen. You know, I asked them, like, well, what can I do? And they didn't really have a very good answer. So I did a simple internet search and came across Fix Nation and came across a couple other rescue groups. And then also just started to learn that, you know, you can call 10 or 20 rescues, but maybe one of them will call you back. And we were fortunate enough that one called back and said, I can't really help you, but I can lend you a trap. And this is how you get spay neuter appointments. So I took her up on her offer. And then really from that moment, the rest is history.
What did it feel like trapping that first cat?
The ramp up to it was really interesting because I think people that are not immersed in what we do, they hear about trapping cats. This was my experience. I thought, I'm going to go out. I have to wait until the sun goes down. You know, I made a joke about needing to put on some black paint underneath my eyes because I was kind of associating like trapping with hunting. I'm going to stalk this cat. I'm going to do it. It was nothing like that. I pulled up to the parking lot and I baited the trap and watched a cat go in. And oh my gosh, just the endorphins and the goosebumps simultaneously going off, because it was that moment I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to fix the world one cat at a time. I've learned that that is very aspirational and that you actually can't save the world by yourself. But it was really exciting because, you know, when I look at the process full circle, devoting just a little bit of time for that cat to make sure that it was vaccinated, to make sure that it was altered, I was able to learn about how that small amount of investment and time and resources could significantly improve the quality of life for that animal. So it was rewarding and exciting and nerve-wracking all at the same time.
Nadia, do you feel the same way about TNR?
Yeah, I mean, I remember like we would go on dates, if you can call it a date, where, you know, Chris was the leader and I was the assistant. But yeah, I mean, that moment where you're watching, especially the cats that are very trap savvy, and you're just sitting there and watching and hoping that they go all the way in. It's almost like making a sport out of it. But I think for me, and I know Chris can agree with this, is also helping the kittens that are, you know, too young to stay there and not necessarily young enough to be nursing from their mom. So that was another way that I was the assistant, by fostering any of the kittens that we did have to pull from the TNR side.
So Nadia, in your position, you know, share a little bit about the job that you have, your day job, and talk about the strategic vision and your understanding of community cat issues from a state level. What is going on in California for community cats right now?
Yeah, so I work for the Correct Shelter Medicine Program, but I'm under the grants program. So the funding mechanism is to provide grants directly to animal shelters. What I'm seeing statewide, it's, you know, the access to care crisis. And it's no secret, I think, that community cats are most impacted by this crisis. The example that I always give folks is, if you stumble upon one cat just the way we did, you're going to stumble upon 20, 30 cats, right? And so what we're seeing is that organizations have been wanting to support the trappers in their community, but they're not able to because they don't have a veterinarian on site. If they have a veterinary partner, they're typically not accepting community cats. And if they are accepting community cats, they're charging upwards of $30, $40, which is technically low cost. But again, if we're thinking about 20 cats at $40 each, the average community member is not going to have the funds for those surgeries. So what we have seen organizations do that is creating some impact is, one, spay-neuter prioritization. So if you know that you only have a specific amount for your surgical capacity, is prioritizing those cats who are most at risk of ending up at the shelter. So maybe it's the pregnant cat, maybe it's the cat that continues to get all the other cats pregnant in the neighborhood. And then along with that is also determining which are the communities are most at risk. So I see a direct correlation between communities that are struggling financially and the amount of community cats that are in their community. Because where there are fewer human resources, there's going to be fewer veterinary resources. The last thing that I'll say too is I see organizations getting as creative as they possibly can. I mean, here in Los Angeles, I would have never thought about veterinarians or large animal veterinarians, but I'm seeing, especially in the Central Valley in California, where there's a lot of farm work, I'm seeing that folks are tapping into their dairy veterinarians. And so typically these are veterinarians that have more experience with cat neuters as opposed to stays. And so they're more likely to work with the organizations after hours. And I guess this is the last thing that I'll say, unless you have a follow-up question, is we're also investing a lot in high quality, high volume spay neuter trainings for veterinarians that are already working in the shelters or ones that are working in private practice and want to support their local shelters.
Everything you say is music to my ears. That is fantastic. High volume, high quality spay neuter training, I think, is something that has also hurt us significantly across the country. And I'm on the board of the United Spay Alliance, and there's a veterinary shortage task force, and we are doing a campaign to try and have statewide wet labs for where veterinarians within the state who have the high volume, high quality spay neuter training will train other veterinarians within the state. So these like mini wet labs that are very localized to help build this as a best practice across the board, regardless of whether you are a nonprofit, high volume, high quality veterinarian, or whether you're a private practice veterinarian. You know, at this point in time, we're just trying to be as efficient and safe and as we can. And if it saves an hour on a day for veterinarians practice, or it enables a private practice veterinarian to offer more surgeries or to be able to accept more clients, it actually helps us on the other end. Because if you have a high volume, high quality spay neuter clinic that doesn't do income verification, some of those folks that can't get into the private practice veterinarians are now going to go to these clinics and take up the space of somebody else that may need more access to that low cost spay neuter services. And I mean, taking the time to do income verification is not something that a lot of organizations want to spend their time doing too. So the best thing we can do is try and encourage everybody to take in all of the clients that they should be taking in. And then we have a much more sort of balanced situation going on. So it sounds great. You have a very strategic approach going on there in California, and that's fantastic. So we sort of talked about like the grassroots, the very baseline, like here's my first colony. And we talked about some of the upper level here, what's going on in California and some of the things that you see with the groups that you're working with. Chris, I'm going to zoom in at the middle level here. So you are Community Cat Program Manager for Pasadena Humane. Is that correct?
I am the chief program officer, but our CCP is one of the programs in my portfolio.
And so tell me about what it's like to have a community cat program during these times.
So our program is still relatively new. It's about 3 years old. It came about because when I joined the organization, we probably did on average 50 to 100 TNR surgeries a year. And then, you know, I of course saw that as an opportunity as one of our former veterinarians. So we started doing MASH clinics. We did 600 TNRs in 1 week and then decided this just needs to be a staple of our organization, because we see if we don't do this, we're going to be spending more resources on a litter of five kittens that come in to our care that we have to take care of and then alter and then place. During these times, it's rewarding, but it can also be heartbreaking because capacity has a ceiling. Our CCP programs and services are only for our service area, which involves a big chunk of Los Angeles, but it doesn't involve all of Los Angeles. So our CCP is the number two stakeholder in our surgical capacity allotment. We look at our shelter animals to get altered before they get adopted first, then our CCP, and then our public spay neuter. It's interesting because having been a trapper for so many years before I joined this organization, I had an assumption of what it was going to look like. And what we're finding is that our service area has a lot of density. So it's not a lot of back alley free roaming cats. It's a lot of outdoor cats that have caretakers, because I don't see a lot of cats in our service area that look like they need immediate medical intervention. I see a lot of cats, but they look healthy and they have shiny coats. So, you know, it's heartwarming in that there's somebody that's looking after them. So that's fantastic. But what our CCP has evolved more than just being a TNR department. It is having a food bank of resource and other resources for caretakers of these cats. So I think getting them in for surgery is only the first step, but we embrace a TNRM ideology. So it's a lot of taking care of other people who are taking care of them. It's about making sure that, you know, we don't treat community cats differently just because they're community cats. So if they're sick or injured and they're already ear tipped, they're not collateral damage by any means just because they've been altered. We work very closely with caretakers to ensure that they can get flea medication when they need it and other resources that they need. So it's been an evolving process that carries a lot of emotions, but primarily good emotions. Our staff has been really receptive to it. I think that we are just now starting to see the return on investment on kitten intake for particular areas. I no longer run the program exclusively, but it's in the hands of some very capable people who are data-driven. So we're making really informed decisions about, you know, where are we targeting either our staff to go out and trapping, or where are we just empowering the community to come in, do very quick trap training on how those work. And we're just finding that, at least in our area, it's a lot of, there's two or three cats in my backyard and people are willing to take care of that. So making sure that enrolling into our programs is easy, and then using whatever data we can extract to make better informed decisions for outreach.
Thanks to Maddie, scholarships are available for our March Surrender Prevention Certification Workshop. Standard registration is $10, but now anyone can get the training they need to feel more confident in their role as a feline surrender prevention specialist. Join us on March 13th to learn what surrender prevention is and why it works. Instructed by Dr. Rachel Geller, she will share real examples with proven results, setting the potential surrenderer and cat on the road to a happy relationship together and keep the cat in their home. We'll cover everything from empathizing with cat owners to working around their limitations. We'll also focus on the three most common reasons for surrender: litter box problems, scratching, and inner cat aggression. Take advantage of the interactive format, extensive handouts, plus four training modules and video footage of actual techniques. Attendees will receive a certificate after taking a short quiz. Learn more and register today at communitycatspodcast.com/keepthecat. You'll find scholarship information available on that page as well. Once again, that link is communitycatspodcast.com/keepthecat.
Ready for a grant challenge like no other? Mark your calendars for this inclusive 2024 Open Arms Challenge. For the entire month of April 2024, animal shelters, foster-based organizations, and public charities are encouraged to create a new program or expand an existing one focused on keeping pets and people together. Learn more about how to register and important dates at maddiesfund.org.
Have you ever wished your cat could talk to you? Well, get ready for an event that will help you better understand your feline friend's needs, thoughts, and feelings by observing their behavior. Join us on April 20th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. for the Community Cats Podcast's annual Online Behavior Day. It's a full day packed with invaluable insights and expertise from our dream team of feline behaviorists, all focused on unraveling the mysteries of cat behavior. Dive into workshops covering a range of feline behavior concerns, from enrichment strategies and kitten training to tackling preventable behavior issues that can often lead to surrender and managing harmony in a multi-cat household. We'll even discuss pet safety. Alongside fascinating workshops, we're spicing things up with fun cat trivia and exciting prizes to keep you engaged and entertained throughout the day. Plus, you'll have a chance to network with fellow professionals and volunteers in the animal welfare sphere, sharing experiences and strategies to better the lives of our kitty companions. So whether you're a seasoned rescuer, a passionate volunteer, or simply a cat enthusiast eager to better understand your kitty, mark your calendars for April 20th and join us for an unforgettable day dedicated to understanding and improving feline behavior. For a limited time, you can take advantage of early bird pricing and register for just $20. Prices will increase soon, so don't wait. Get all the details and register online today at communitycatspodcast.com/behavior day. That's communitycatspodcast.com/behavior day.
Do you need TNR resources to share on demand? We've got you covered. Check out our Everything TNR playlist, available now on the Community Cats Podcast YouTube channel. This comprehensive playlist includes all of our free webinars presented in partnership with Neighborhood Cats. Topics include tips for trappers and colony caregivers, best practices for targeted TNR, return to field programs, and much more. There's something for everyone who wants to help outdoor cats and kittens. Free to stream anytime. Just visit www.communitycats.com/TNR-playlist. And I would assume you probably are using either the zip code or census information for the highest intake into the shelter. Those are your target areas for TNR. I mean, that's sort of been at least standard operational procedures from a most effective approach on TNR.
We're trying to do that, but we're also using a lot of just the information that we can extract from our shelter software. So what I have done is we'll filter out feline intake, and then we'll go one step further to say feline intake for cats under 6 months. and then go from there. So we can kind of take out the owner surrender cats and all that stuff. And there's always cats out there, but we want our impact to be as strong as we want it to be. Then we're using a lot of that zip code and heat mapping technology to figure out where we can do outreach. So within my division at the Humane Society, I also have the privilege of overseeing our outreach department and licensing department. So it's about, you know, making sure that licensing canvassers have TNR collateral with them as they're out in the field anyways, just to try and attack it from multiple angles.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And certainly based on the various needs assessments that I've done over the years in various different communities, I would say I think the social vulnerability index is a pretty good parallel to where you're going to end up going. So if you're an organization that's like, oh my gosh, I can't heat map, I can't do all that, collect all this information and the staff. I was like, you know what? You're not going to go too far off if you just look up your social vulnerability index numbers and look into the community that you serve and target those areas that are under the most strain with that information. You're not going to waste your time, I don't think.
Yeah. And to Nadia's point earlier, I think that, you know, where there is more density or a lack of human services, you're going to find other problems or challenges that just naturally evolve that hit the shelter system. So what you're saying also applies to just all animals that are at risk of entering the shelter.
So Nadia, when you're looking at distributing these grant funds all around the state, are you looking for those areas that are most vulnerable to support more aggressively, or how are you making these decisions?
Yes, absolutely. My ear perked when you said social vulnerability index, because that is one of the measurements that is actually automatically linked to every shelter's account on our database. We try to approach this through a lens of racial equity, diversity, and inclusion. And so that means, yes, looking at which counties are the most at risk based on average household income, human resources available, you name it. We also look at organizations that have historically been marginalized based on where they're located. So we see a lot of rural areas by nature, by being in a community where there's a lot of land and very little resources. So by nature, they are being excluded from these opportunities. So we do proactive outreach to shelters that I've never even heard of in my entire life, but we're very intentional about making sure that they know that there are opportunities for funding out there. We also, when we give out grants, we're looking at it as a partnership. So it's not just us giving the money and dictating what organizations do. It's really working together to strategize on how to best utilize those funds. And I say partnership too, because we're extracting information from those organizations that we can. And then as far as the process for applying for our grants, we try to make it as barrier-free as possible, especially knowing what folks who work in animal shelters experience on a daily basis, and being mindful that not every organization has grant writers. Sometimes a kennel attendant or it's a volunteer who's writing those grant proposals.
So we run the Community Cats grants here at the Community Cats podcast, which, you know, actually it's now part of the United Spay Alliance. It's a program now of United Spay Alliance in 2024. We've launched that. But while we were running it, we had over 200 organizations involved with it. And I have to say, I got a lot of grant applications and a lot of conversation in very Northern California, up at the Northern border. Are you finding that as sort of a spay-neuter desert, a resource desert versus other parts of the state? Or do I just have like a group of people emailing me that are sharing my number?
Yes. I mean, I would say, you know, even though in Los Angeles County, it still feels like it's unsurmountable, we actually are very blessed with the amount of surgery options that we have here. I've worked with organizations as far up north as Siskiyou County. And I think the difference there is, again, that there's so much land. The poverty rates are pretty high. I know in that county, the average household income is in the 40,000s, which is very, very low. And some of these organizations are actually traveling out of state to be able to get surgeries. And, you know, talking about Siskiyou County in particular, it's such a huge county that even if they're trying to help every city in their county, it's unsurmountable. There's one veterinarian there who is actually doing low-cost TNR surgeries. And this is, again, going to the dairy veterinarians. This is a veterinarian who came out of his own private practice. You're nodding, Stacey, so you probably have worked with them. But yes, I feel like there are these pockets, and certainly in Central California, but also up north, where it's very rural. It almost feels like those communities have been forgotten by animal welfare in general. And I hope that with the work we're doing with them, that we're shedding light on what's going on there, and that at the very least they feel seen, and we're making their challenges just a little bit more bearable.
Yeah, huge challenges up there for sure. And I think we're probably talking about the same group who are, you know, really trying to address the issue to the best of their capabilities and doing some mobile work and that type of thing. So Nadia, if folks are interested in finding out more about this grant program, how would they do this?
Yeah, so they can go to californiaforallanimals.com. If there are any folks who do not qualify for direct funding, we do have partnership grants, so where grassroots organizations can partner with their local animal shelters. And that's an opportunity for those also TNR groups who are often left out by these grant opportunities to be able to partner with their shelter and also be able to receive some of this funding.
And Chris, if folks are interested in reaching out to you, how would they do that?
To me at cramon, that's C-R-A-M-O-N, at pasadenahumane.org, or Instagram at Chris the Cat Guy.
And Nadia, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just close with saying, I suspect that you have a lot of cat people, a lot of trappers in your audience. And so again, I just want to encourage you to reach out to your shelters. I know, especially in California, I'm seeing so many organizations that are really trying to do things differently. So if something didn't go right, you know, last year or this year, I encourage you to please continue to reaching out, because you're going to be able to help cats more and be more impactful if you're working together.
Chris, any last thoughts from you?
Similar to what Nadia said, I recognize that as a trapper or as an advocate for outdoor community cats, you can find yourself burning the candle at both ends, because with doing TNR comes fostering, because you inevitably find kittens and there's hard decisions to make. Is it friendly? Does it want to be in a home? My statement is this: you can't save the world by yourself. I went down a road of, if I just wait one more hour in this parking lot, I can improve this many more lives. That was my rationale for a long time. And I appreciate all the lessons that I learned. The biggest one that I learned was, you can't save the world by yourself. You've got to take care of yourself. And there are other very good-hearted, well-intentioned people out there who are probably thinking, I need to do this, or I'm the only one who cares. If you can try and connect with those people and create a group, strength in numbers is a very strong way forward.
Agree with you 100%. I used to say, for every one of you, I need 4 people fundraising. And now I'm going to add, I need 10 foster homes. And then that's the perfect balance pyramid for them, because it frustrates a trapper so much when the pipeline is bogged down. They're full. They have no place to hold because they're doing the fostering, because there's no fostering outlets for them. And it frustrates them because they know out on the street, there's more work to be done. And that's where the system falls apart.
Capacity is capacity. And I think that everybody should kind of ask themselves, what is my capacity and where do I need to enlist the help of other people?
Right. And one other thing, task that I used to do on a weekly basis when I was running the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society, no matter what, every week I gave something away that I was doing. I delegated one thing. Now, it could have been running a whole program. It could have been running the donation can program, or it could have been picking up one donation can, but I was giving something away every week, you know, writing thank you letters or fostering that 12-year-old cat that came into the building that was like my soft spot. Any cat over the age of 10, I'd be like, I'm going to take that cat home, you know? And so, you know, finding someone else to take the cat and foster the cat rather than me taking it home when I had X number of cats and, you know, 2 young children, you know, wanting to beat up on the old cats, right? So it's like, you know, you got to keep that balance. And so I had to practice that muscle because it was so hard for me to give things up. It's really hard. And I always knew people were going to put things on my plate. So I was going to always take more on. So I had to kind of always practice that outflow. And so if you aren't giving things up, practice it. Even if it's something that's not making a big deal, you know, saying, oh, well, it's so easy. I could just do it myself. Just practice it. Keep practicing, giving it away. And I used to love going to the bank with the money and doing deposits. I loved it. It was like the one thing that made me feel really good. And I had to give it away because someone was there willing to take it, perfectly capable. I gave it away. And I mean, I saved 6 hours a week doing those deposits, right? It was huge. I saw, oh my gosh, I can do all this other stuff. So please practice giving it away every week.
That's great advice. I love that.
Well, Chris and Nadia, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with me today and being guests on the show. And I hope we'll have you on again in the future.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much, Stacey.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.